Okay, 3 o'clock, we call this meeting to order, October 15th for the street office.
We still have Chad coming.
The agendas are all posted.
Yes, sir.
Let's see. Let's begin with the Pledge of Allegiance, and Mr. Young will lead us.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right. Thank you all. Are there any public comments on this agenda? Motion to accept the agenda.
I move we accept the agenda as presented.
I'll second that.
Got a motion and a second. Everybody in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Very good. Approval of minutes to the previous meeting of September 17th.
I have a question about it.
Okay.
I see that the two of the financial reports are attached, but not the big one. Is that standard?
That's standard. It's always been standard that way. Those are the two that are kept permanently.
You mean this is the only time I ever looked at it and saw that?
Apparently.
I'll move we approve it then.
Okay, we have a motion to... do we have a second?
I'll second that.
Okay, we've got a motion and a second. Everybody in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? We had a great conference up in Seattle. Miss Melissa led the troops up there and had us some great dinners lined up. You really missed out there, so they were fantastic. We were on the 32nd floor of the Lincoln Building looking out over the Washington Bay, and my goodness, it was so beautiful. Chad, good to see you, man. All right. Attorney's report.
I have nothing at this time.
Okay. Manager's report.
Perfect. We're going to start with safety first, so Kyle will kick us off.
All righty. For the month of October, our safety meeting was held in Overton, as usual. Topics were dealing with stressful and irate customers.
Whoa.
And winter driving. So a couple of good topics. We had 49 attendees, so a little bit down. A lot of vacations, a lot of trainings, and a lot of work going on. So still good attendance, though. You'll see from that picture on the right that I was able to take, there's many of us in the pink shirts in support of breast cancer. Not sure if you're aware, but we... we're able to provide those to all the employees soon after Kelly started her treatment, and we wear those now every Thursday. Or most employees try to wear those every Thursday in support of the breast cancer awareness. We have a couple of our OPD5 family that we're supporting through this. So this next picture here shows us all off, gathered up. Very good picture. For department training for the month of October, I let Cody lead that out, Cody Hardy. We went out to the Overton Pole Yard and did a couple of jobs that maybe we don't do quite so often. Now that the weather's turning, it was a good time to get out there and get some practice in. The picture on the right shows them removing and installing a pole mount transformer from a pole. It's not a practice that we do ever, quite honestly, but we need to have the ability to do it when they're in the back of a yard that's inaccessible or the floods come through and the roads are washed out. So as a matter of fact, this day, as you can see from that picture there, big storm cloud rolled through and we did it during the rain. So
Ooh.
It was live work. It was a very good training that Cody led that day.
Wow.
Is that a wooden pole?
Yes, sir, it is. Yep. Wooden pole, and that transformer that they're hoisting up is about 300 pounds, over 300 pounds. So we have much larger that they do at times. Outages for the month of September, we had 13 planned outages and one unplanned outage. The one unplanned outage was a result of that big storm that we had come through early September. That was at least over in that valley. It was just a gully washer. Ended up being an insulator that failed and phase floated off the arm just underneath the cross arm. And it rode that way for 3 or 4 days before the wind came up and blew that phase into the other phase and tripped out. So for that storm that we went through, we were very fortunate. Didn't have a single outage except for that one insulator issue. I see many transformer replacements, switch replacements for all of our maintenance work that we've been doing in that month of September. Many of those are upgrades, not necessarily because the transformer need to be replaced for leaks or anything like that, but just part of our upgrades and, you know, a lot of maintenance, but a lot of upgrades as well for our facilities. Service installations for the month of September, you'll see Dinosaur Substation, which is Pulte Homes, continues to have the majority at 22 last month. The one commercial we had down there at the bottom on the left is Paiute Substation, which is out to the smoke shop. I'll share that in a minute, but we had a billboard installed out there, and so that's one that the Overton team tackled in the last month. Installations for the year, we're up to 347. With September's additionals. On October 2nd, we held a surprise test for the apprentices. We have 4 apprentices right now on my team. They're gonna be testing to advance to the next stage in early December. 2 of those, in fact, Mike Abbott and Zach Barnum, are gonna test to journey out, to become journeyman linemen. So we're very excited. They're each on different poles there. These are 2 different jobs. We split them up, we give them no heads up that this is happening that morning, and we bring them in and we spend the morning going through a mock test for them to make sure they're ready, make sure they're going to be a good representation of Overton Power District as they go and test in early December.
Yeah. So, where do you go to test that, Kyle?
They test up in St. George.
Oh.
Yeah. This practice test is at our Overton yard in that pole yard we have out back, but they test in St. George early December and in March.
Did you usually. Used to go to Grand Junction?
That was just a line school to just get training, and we still do send apprentices at times to go to Grand Junction, but for the testing and the apprentice parts, it's through the IPSA group, which is Utah. We try and focus in St. George area, so it's not so much on Overton Power to send them to Salt Lake for the testing up there. We had a training with the tree doctor, which is Nick Huerta's team in Overton. They are our hired contractors to trim our trees around our facilities, mostly in Moab Valley. He tries to get over here and take care of our Virgin Valleys also, but mostly Moab Valley. So we set up this training because we want to make sure that if we're hiring this contractor that they understand all the risks, that they have the proper procedures. They know the communication. They know Cody and his team, and they know how close they can get and what wires they are and all the different parts of it. Cody and his team took a couple hours this morning on September 30th and went through all that with Nick Huerta and our awesome trailer that we have there, and they energized it and they burned the branches and showed what happened if Nick and his team are accidentally get into that line. So they had a great training that morning and covered all the bases that we expect them to. There were some trainings attended by my team in the last month. Chris Felix, Ben Jantz, and Shane Levitt all attended the Global Damage Prevention Summit in Dallas, Texas. They are the ones that mostly do the locating for Overton Power District, all the locates that get called in for 811 and that stuff. So that summit is geared towards that. Sent them there to get practices, knowledge, and also all the new technologies that might be out there that Overton Power could move towards. Omar went and attended the NRECA Co-op University in Plano, Texas. It was a 5-day event. Omar's working hard. He's acquired 16 of the 20 credits to get that Co-op University under his hat. That once he finishes that, he'll have that supervisor and management development program certification. And we're hopeful the first half of next year he'll have that finished up. He's working very hard at it. The jobs that the men have been doing in Overton, The pull changes continued, or well, were continuing. They wrapped it up October 1st. They did the high voltage extension for the smoke shop, like I spoke on earlier, and then the Logandale ball fields over there. They've done that addition, so that was a bit of the work for them. In Mesquite, they continued to work on the second south vault relocation job, which I've spoke on many times over the last couple months. They've got that mostly wrapped up right now. They spent a week tree trimming in this valley. As you can see the pictures on the right, some of those trees, you couldn't even hire contractors to go in there and trim that. If darn palm trees, they grow so fast, you can't stay ahead of them. So our team goes in there at times and trims that up. And then many subdivisions are coming to head, it feels like, right now. We've got two that they've tackled in the last week, and they got a couple more on deck.
It looks like those shorter palm trees are going to be right up in the line.
Yep.
Would we be better off just to have them removed now?
And we have a good process, honestly. Christy helps out a lot with it. When Omar and Cody define palm trees that are too costly to just trim, then she reaches out to the property owners, and we take them to the ground. We hired, like Nick Ware, to take them to the ground. It's been a far better process for Overton Power District. Yeah. And honestly, you would think it would be a lot of turmoil with the property owners, but it's pretty receptive. You know, it's not as big of a struggle as you expect it to be. So this is a good picture of that second south vault move that I spoke on. You can see the vault on the very far left out in the lane of traffic. The new vault, that's the existing vault. The new vault in place inside the landscaping rock that they're going to move to. And then on the right is the actual job in place, and shows what the men have to, how much dirt has to be moved and the conduit process to get through that. So.
Clean out your shoring.
Yeah. And we took on the shoring project, and I really wanted to make sure the teams are adopting that this year. And you can see in that bottom right of that picture, they continue to do it. Technology is awesome, has made it very simple to install shoring on those. They're lightweight, they're easy to store in the truck, easy to get out of the truck. And I'm very proud of the teams for adopting that and continuing to make safe work practice choices. Any questions, thoughts?
I think your training the tree trimmers is really excellent, much like the landscape people.
Yeah.
That really shows a commitment to our contractors, and that makes them a little more loyal to, I think, to us.
Yeah.
And plus it avoids a nasty situation.
Potential risk in the future, absolutely. And we intend to keep doing that on a rotation. I don't know if it'd be annually, but we want to make sure that we can continue that training with whatever contractor it is that we have hired.
Now, we have them sign in, so we know who was there.
We do. We have a roster that they signed in on. Yeah. Yep. Part of the WEC process will potentially require that as well. So, yeah.
Hey, Randall.
I don't think he heard you. Oh, yeah. I'm just waiting for it to come up. Thank you. So this is the long jar switch yard. The contractor hunted in there. They're getting all the lower steel in place, and they've also moved over and done a little bit of Raptor, and so that's moving along quite well. Did you guys notice the different paint colors in Raptor and in Long Drive? Sometime when you're driving around Mesquite, tell me which colors you like better. There's one that we prefer now going forward, and so I'd like your opinion on that. Maybe next board meeting, that's your assignment.
This is the Taurus, the Gila, the 138 line, and the contractor is pulling in conductor right now. And if you'll notice that with this portion, we have a distribution underbuild, and so there's parts of the right of way where we didn't have room to leave our distribution in place, and so we underbuild it on the transmission. And we needed to get this section from 202 to 245 completed, because we need to de-energize a portion on the Overton side to be able to continue to feed the microwaves there in the Mormons for communications. So that's what they're doing, why they're working on this portion first. And then we have a foundation structure that, as you're driving along the freeway and where our line crosses, we have a foundation structure going right on that cliff edge. And so we need to get that installed very quickly.
I see they're drilling over there.
They have been. They've had to skip that spot because we haven't been able to de-energize our distribution yet.
So once this is completed and Kyle's crew finishes up the distribution in near the Gila substation, we'll be able to de-energize that Overton site and get that foundation started and put in. The WEC project continues to progress slowly. We continue to reach out to APCO to review our documentation and get their feedback. And so monthly we'll be giving updates, hopefully, as it moves along closer to July of next year, where we can give you some more positive compliance data. The Ring Bus and 69 KV project at Tortoise is starting this next week, and they'll start with the foundations. And that's my report. Are there any questions?
How long do you anticipate that project?
I'll be finishing up progress this next year.
Thank you, Randall. Kevin with SubOps.
Okay. The Pain Hills distribution is right up here. The transform pad with the, you can see the massive amount of steel that goes into those transform pads, and on the right-hand side is a lot of steel that goes into those. And then a lot of concrete. It's all poured now. It's done. They just finished today, but we're ready now to start running the conduit. And once we get the conduit ran, we'll be able to start tearing down that stuff up in the Mesquite sub and moving it up here. We've got
Arrowhead.
It's Mesquite sub right now.
Okay.
It's going to be a hard transition.
For one person at this table.
It's been Mesquite for 25 years. So the next thing that they need to do is start doing the ground grid, the conduit, and then out on the far end, you see a pole out there. We've got to run a second circuit to that pole from this equipment to feed down south to take that load that's in the Mesquite sub area and move it to here. And so that's the next thing that we're going to work on this. It's a, and this is the finished pad. It looks pretty nice. They do a really good job. The transformer pad, the transformers for the Arrowhead substation, we pushed them back to March now. And so we've got a little bit of time, but it's a pretty tight time frame in order to get that equipment up here energized and tear out the old stuff down there to get the pads poured. So we're moving forward. We're making good progress. I did a timeline sheet of, you know, everything that needs to be done. We're working on this, knocking it out little by little, but we should have the 60% review drawings in a couple of weeks. We'll get those done, then we'll get the issue for construction for the transform pads down there, and then we can get a contractor to get bids on those. Hopefully get them poured before January is our goal.
Is your target?
Start it.
Summer to have at least one transformer energized?
This transformer up here re-energized by summer.
By some, this one?
Because The load from there is going to actually transfer to here. So we've got a lot of work to do to get that switching all here in place instead of down there. So, and shifting load from substation to substation. It's quite a bit of work just to de-energize that transformer over the summer. So, not de-energize, move it up here over the summer. So. We're trying to stay in time, so a lot of moving parts. But another project is we've had the relays on the left are SEL 351R relays. They've been in service for 20 plus years. I actually installed, when I first started with Overton Power, I installed these relays on the left and replaced some older Kyle Form 4s and some other relays and put in. Those were new when I started. The ones on the right are the ones that we're replacing them with. But the relays are 20 plus years old, so they're no longer under warranty. SEL doesn't warranty them anymore, and they're no longer making them. They're going to it's a 651R, a little bit different relay, but basically because they're not building them anymore, they don't repair them. And so they've given us a discount on everyone that we change out that goes bad. But we have 24 of these in service right now. Different varying years, but the older ones are the ones that have been failing. And so what we're doing is we're taking, like this is Overton Substation. So we replaced all the ones in Overton Substation with the new relays, and that gives us a couple of spares that we can use in case one goes down. And then we'll replace, over the next few years, we'll start rotating these out with the newer models. But you can see how much smaller the footprint is. They have a plate that bolts right up to the old existing panel. And this is the back side. You can see the one on the left is the old one. The one on the right is the new one. You can see how much smaller they are, more compact. And they do a lot more work. They're a lot more intuitive, a lot more work. So anyway, we've got those online tested, and they're back in service at Overton Substation. The substation crew, they go through training every now and then. And what this one was they took an old scenario, an old outage scenario, and they went through it, and the crews had to identify the cause, what they could do to resolve the outage or divert the power. So they created scenarios to switch power to different areas, different substations, in order to get power back onto the most customers they could. It's very important training. It keeps these guys sharp. It keeps their minds thinking about what could possibly be down the road, or options that they might have. So that is my report.
Kevin, with like this training, were you able to incorporate the use of APCO with the requirements that they have to do the switching?
Not yet.
Into this training?
Not yet. That's coming. That'll be as soon as we get APCO. APCO doesn't have visibility into our system yet. We're working on that transition. And as soon as they do, we will start doing that kind of training. We've also got some training lined up to be certified switchmen, which means we can go in the substation and push the open and close button on their request. So it's going to be a big transition for us. We're not allowed to use SCADA anymore to control our system. We have to go through APCO and have them do it. It's interesting what we have to do. So
it's going to be very hard on Kevin's heart, but he's going to be able to handle it.
We still have, this is only 7 substations and only limited limited relays in those substations. The rest of it is still ours. So we still control the rest of our substations. That's my report.
Thank you, Hannah. All right, Scott.
Okay. So my presentation is cybersecurity for the month of October, but it's very, very vanilla until we get to a certain slide, and then it goes off the rails. Okay, so cybersecurity training, 96% of our employees attended that training. The 3 cybersecurity lessons: beware of insider threats, secure sensitive assets, validate persuasion attempts. Internal phishing is looking really good over the last few months. We had 0 of our employees click on any of our phishing attempts. We're looking at 32,000 email in September, and 4,000 of those were spam. There's our firewall blocks by country.
I don't even know how to say that.
Yeah, that's why I'm not saying it.
Okay.
There, just have a look. There you go. All right.
Jack's got it. Come on.
Azerbaijan.
Holy cow.
Okay, server system uptime for the month of September is at 100%. Our data backup and restoration has been done and tested. We are 100%. And we continue to follow the EISAC. We continue to follow the trends that are happening out in the electric industry. And these are the top 3 security threats for the month of September. There was a lot of software exploitation. There was some social engineering and ransomware that other utilities are reporting. And then there was actually some vandalism, drone activity, and copper theft. So that's kind of the top 3 things that are happening in the industry as far as threat patterns.
Have you had much copper in the last year or two?
I don't think so. No.
So I know that for a while, you know, pretty years ago, they used to tag us pretty hard.
Yeah.
But I haven't heard much about it in the last 5, 6, 7 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, no.
Christmas is really corny.
All right, here we go. This is an employee highlight. This employee has spent nights, weekends, countless hours going after this thing that I'm about to talk to you about. Very impressive. He set a goal, and he achieved that goal. This employee is none other than Stephen Brown. I have an office right next to his, so I know the path. It's been almost 3 years on this journey to getting his Bachelor of Science degree.
Whoa.
Cybersecurity and Information Assurance.
Oh, my goodness.
When we first interviewed him 6 years, almost six and a half years ago, I think we were talking and there were some things tossed around, and we said, Stephen, what do you think about advancing our cybersecurity program? Because, you know, IT administrator, cybersecurity, you hire an IT guy, you think you're getting an all-in-one guy, but that's not really how it works. And Stephen's answer to that was, yes, I can do that. So he's gone ahead and did it.
We're so proud of you, Stephen.
Yeah, along with the Bachelor of Science degree, I'm going to go through these. It's going to be really quick. But he earned his CompTIA penetration, and he can tell you what. If you have a question about any one of these certifications, these are professional industry standard certifications. So Pentest Plus, Network Plus, Security Analytics Professional Plus, CompTIA A Plus, Linux, the ITIL, which I don't really know what that is, Stephen. Project Plus, Systems Security Certified Practitioner, and Security Plus. So he has really gone above and beyond, and I just say congratulations, Stephen.
That's great.
Thank you.
Very good. Good job.
Is Linux is it a language?
Linux is a computer.
Operating system.
Pretty commonly used for most servers and things like that. An idle one, there is actually really no acronym for it. They just call it that. But, yeah.
Well, good for you.
Congratulations.
Hey, so I have a question on your education. How does Open Empower do there? Is it reimbursement? If you pass, how does that work?
So we pay 75% of your classroom costs and books if you get a B, and 50% if you get a C.
Oh.
And so you pay, and then and then you submit your grades with your bill, and then we reimburse you.
Very good.
Yes.
Thanks.
And all education is done on your own time, not on Overton Power time. But as managers, we encourage you, if you have a class that you need to leave early for, we let you work through your lunch, or we encourage you to go get your education. But Stephen did all of this on his own time.
Now that he's finished, why don't we raise it for entire grades to 80%?
Because you waited till Melissa and I graduated and raised her to 75.
Okay, moving on. Financial services.
Okay, the finance department has been working on the capital and operating budgets, the rate adjustment, and also we are preparing for the year-end inventory. A couple of our members attended NREA, which we had a couple weeks ago, and then also UREca. So myself and Kim Watts, who's our general ledger accounting clerk, attended NREA, and that was the first time for her to attend that. It was great for us to listen and learn and to network with the other utilities and vendors. And then a week after that, Shauna Marshall, who's our accounts payable clerk, and I went up to Mount Wheeler Power. We attended a conference at Mount Wheeler in Ely. It was a UREca, strictly for accountants or the accounting department and HR department. And so the classes and the training were geared towards that. And we went over advanced Excel skills and operations, budgeting, and credit card processing. We got to tour their facility, which was very insightful. Got to network more with the Mount Wheeler folks and the members of UREca. Also got the tour of the Robinson Mine, which was really amazing. They mainly do copper there, but they also do gold and silver, kind of like a byproduct. So that's what's been going on in the finance department. So at the end, when we were preparing for our financial statements for September, we're doing our bank reconciliation, and Kim, the general ledger clerk, found some fraudulent activity in our operating account. And so we notified Bank of Nevada. Sure enough, I mean, she suspected it was fraud. Sure enough, it was. They made us whole. And then we're taking steps to increase our level of security in our bank account to prevent that from happening again. So we're meeting actually tomorrow with Bank of Nevada, myself, and a couple other of my staff to prevent that from happening in the future. So that's a little bit else what's been going on. So we're pleased to report this month's financial statements. On line one, our operating revenues were just under $5.7 million. On line three, our cost of purchase power, $3.1 million. Our line 20, total cost of electric service, $4.4 million. The line 22, interest income, was $40,000. And then our line 27, we don't always have information or data on this line, but we received from Western United Patronage Capital for $311,000. So they're a co-op, and we received that in September. That's the annual amount that we received from them. They're on a fiscal year end, so mm-hmm. We're pleased to report that and receive that. It was quite substantial. Their co-op is based off of their margins and the volume of material and inventory that we purchased from them. So that helped contribute to our line 29, patronage capital, and net margins of $1,558,976. Our budget for this month was $1,570,000, so we were just $12,000 shy of what we budgeted. So we're pleased to report that. So our year-to-date margins, $3.7 million, and column B, and then our budgeted amount, we're at 4.9, so we're just under 1.2 million off from our budget. A balance sheet, we close with a net value in our utility plant of 159 million on the asset side, and then on line 8 we have investments in associated organizations, our line 15 cash, line 18 temporary investments, line 23 inventory, all totaling to our line 29 total assets of 189 million. Our margins and equities, line 36 on the liability side, we are at 131 million. And we have our long-term debt on line 43, accounts payable. And then again, our total liabilities and equity is 189 million. Modified debt service coverage, with estimates through the end of the year, we're at 1.7. Our goal is at 1.85, so slightly under that. Equity as a percentage of assets, just under 70%. So over our goal. Times interest earned ratio, this is year-to-date figure, 4.05. And our goal is 4.13. This is the detail of our cash in our checking account. So we close with a value of $3,070,000.
Question there. Mm-hmm. If we had a margin of 1.3, right? But our cash goes down. What's the deal then? Well, 1.6 is going down. Shouldn't the margin
turn off? Margin doesn't always tie with cash flow. So,
well, how do we know what cash flow is?
How do we know?
Is this it?
This is cash flow in our checking account. Yeah.
Yeah, but how do we know our total cash flow deal?
We have to look at all the bills, all the checks that were written.
Yeah, well, but shouldn't we know that? The board should know what our cash, how we're doing on cash and stuff. Seems
it's
to
in
me.
The report.
So if you want to,
an income statement is what you're wanting. So cash expenses out.
So this year is our operating margins, line 29 right there for the month. A cash flow statement is we've never reported that. We don't, it's a statement that essentially shows total cash flow in and out, and we don't report that, but if it's something
I look at that, though, all the checks that are written, I have that on my...
Yeah, that's not necessarily a cash flow report, but that is the cash going out of the operating account.
Okay.
If this last statement right here, I mean, this is all the cash going through AP that we go through at the end, this right here. So if you want to know actual cash that we went through, checks right here is almost $7 million.
Yeah, you know, from business experience, you seem like you ought to know how much your income is each month and how much your total expenditures are, so you know whether you're going down or you're staying even or you're actually building cash. Does it seem that way?
Yeah, the balance sheet.
Yeah.
The balance sheet.
Where's that?
That's it.
I don't see that here.
Balance sheet's the second.
Look at it when you get a chance. Think about it.
We can get back to that, but this is the balance sheet right here that we report right here. This indicates where our cash is. So when the balance sheet goes up and down, cash is in line 15, total cash. So our cash comes out of line 15 and line 18 when we take money out of our investments.
Yeah.
And the margins. And the margins go on line 36.
Well, that's in a different form.
Yeah. Let's just say it's very difficult to list all the checks. I mean, you jump me back and forth. I see that, but I'm not sure what line goes with what. You know what I mean? Because we got a cash flow, how much cash we have on hand, and then how much we've spent, and then it should be a positive negative number. Yeah. When we see the checking account, it goes down by one, but you're telling me we made 1.3, or some number like that. It's just a little confusing to me, I guess. It's just making me... Okay, I'm sorry.
Okay.
Jonathan, it didn't look like we've done a draw on our...
Not in September, we did. But we did in October.
Okay.
We'll report that next month.
Okay.
But we haven't done any borrowings yet also that we sought for approval from the last, 2 months ago. So, yeah, this month we didn't do any draws. We're at $9.9 million right there on line 18 for temporary investments, our Morton account.
Oh, yeah.
And that crept up a little from the prior month because of our interest income. So, yeah. And those were the balances with the detail in our Morton account right here, showing by security type in the pie graph and then by duration, security duration in the bar graph. And then as of September 30th, we reached a milestone, OPD, over 19,000 customers. We're at 19,036 customers, and increased by 62 from the prior month. So pleased to report that. Connection fees, we had 32, valued at $32,000. Our operating, billing arrangements, we have a total of 80, so it crept up a little bit in September for our residential customers at 18,747. And then we have a total of 7 commercial customers at 2,020. Our roundup program balances in each valley are displayed here, so those both continue to grow. And then the detail for our loans, and then this hasn't changed other than our September 30th third quarter payment was due, paid on time, and paid in full, $1,433,000. Our total balance in those loans, $43,551,000. And then I come to this quite a bit. I use this probably, I don't know, every other day I'm referring to these reports here. And so very insightful. By customer class, we have breakout of the number of customers, the number of kilowatt hours sold, and actually the revenue. And then everything is summary down here at the bottom.
You've crossed over to having a favorite financial statement in the accounting village. You made it.
So down here at the bottom in the blue, our monthly cost for KWH is 7.56 cents. Monthly revenue, 11.57 cents. And then our 2025 average cost of 7.65 cents. So our cost increased a little bit from September to August. That was mainly due to, in July and August, we received a voluntary reduction credit from our CRC or Colorado River Commission power or energy that we receive. So essentially what that is there are one of the hydro projects is contractually obligated to provide us so much power, and when they can't, they try to make it up, either buy it on the market, or one of the options is to offer us a credit, and so they couldn't provide that, and so in those 2 months, in July and August, they provided that credit to us, and it was quite substantial. It was over August was $170,000. So basically that was the difference why August was reduced. And then a little bit of the solar in September, we received a little bit less in solar energy than we did in August. So that's the big swing difference for August and September.
One of the things that Tenasca provides for us is the optimization of our hydro. And so they help us analyze that layoff. And if we wanted to, WAPA would go out and contract for that makeup of what we wouldn't receive in our CROD, but we have to pay what is the market rate for that WAPA is offering or is able to get. And Tenasca helps us analyze that and see if we can get it cheaper for them. For those months, we were able to get that cheaper from our market contract through them. And so on top of saving that, they gave us back that $174,000. So we're thankful for Tenasca helping us with those.
And that concludes my presentation, unless you have any further questions.
Thank you, Jonathan. Thank you. It doesn't feel like I'm reporting to you guys that I attended very many meetings, but I feel like since I've seen you last, I've barely slept because all I have done is attend meetings. So the first thing that I just want to talk to you guys about is that it is our 90th anniversary. We've been keeping the lights on in both the Virgin and Moapa Valleys for 90 years. Vernon has done some incredible historical articles that we've posted in the paper. We've been putting things out on our social media. We have some chocolates and things that we're going to be offering to our customers this month when they come into the office. And so I just want to say happy anniversary to OPD5. We received a request from NRECA to show support for the Fix FEMA Act. I have acted in support of that. We have posted some information on our social media in conjunction with the Voices for Cooperative Power. I've also sent a letter of support to Congressman Horsford's office, and I received a response back from him, but it was a very boilerplate response that they send to all of those things. I also sent that directly to his DC staffer, Ishmael, and received a very nice email back from him. We've come a very long way in a short period of time in our relationship with Congressman Horsford's office, and I'm appreciative of that. We attended the NREA annual meeting, and Jada Moena is eighth grade student from Moapa Valley, and she started off our meeting with the Pledge of Allegiance and the Star Single Banner, and that little girl has a voice of an angel. It was so touching, so wonderful, and she represented OPD5 very well. We're very thankful that she was there to come, and we gave her a cute little basket of thank you, and I don't know that we even needed to. She just was so thrilled that we asked her to come, and her mom just beamed watching her. So I'm so thankful that NREA gave us that opportunity. We had a lot of really good discussions throughout that conference. We talked about hydropowering the future, public policy priority challenges and opportunities, keeping up with demand, looking through the crystal ball for an economic update. And we had a really interesting talk from Fred Flippens, who is the general manager of Harney Electric out of Burns, Oregon, or Hines, Oregon is where they're located. And then Ted Case, who is the Oregon statewide director. And one of the things that they spoke on was that they have been going and electrifying villages in Guatemala. And so going and having his line crew have those experiences where they have to put a pole on their shoulder as a group of men and carry it in and stand up a pole and hang the infrastructure. It was a very touching story. And I was watching Kyle and his crew out doing their training a couple weeks ago, and those young men were lowering that transformer down off of the pole. And I thought, this ain't Guatemala, obviously, but Kyle's doing those same teachings for our crew. He's preparing his crew that should a flood come and we don't have a truck, what do we do? And are we capable of doing it? And that is no easy task. If you see the weight and the awkwardness of that transformer and the fact that those guys can do that, I'm so proud of our crew. And I'm not in any hurry to send our crew to Guatemala, I'm going to be honest. I want their wives to still speak to me. But I do think that it was a very feel-good story, and we all learned something from it. We heard messages from U.S. Senator Catherine Cortez Masto. We also had a video message from Congressman Horsford and Senator Jackie Rosen. So that was very nice. It was wonderful for us to have Cortez Masto in the building with us and willing to spend some time with us. She has a staffer named Sean Loken that we have been in communication with for the last few years. And I visited with him in D.C. on our last trip. And the senator made a point to come and tell me that Sean was getting married in Tahoe that weekend. And I thought, that's pretty amazing that she, now, obviously, when you see me in a group of the NREA fellow CEOs, I'm easy to identify. But still, she remembered that we had a relationship with Sean and came. And again, I thought, it speaks to the relationship that we're getting with our federal delegation. So we appreciated her time and attention. Governor Lombardo had staff in attendance from both his Office of Energy and the Office of Federal Assistance. They delivered very exciting news. The rural utilities in Nevada received grant awards for a total of just over $8 million. OPD5 received $944,802 of those dollars, and those funds will be used for a fire mitigation program that we are going to do in the Moapa area. That project will get started. We will do the engineering and the work plan of that in 2026 with the hopes of doing the actual install to begin in 2027. That's going to go through a very restrictive wildlife area, and so that will take a lot of planning and preparation for our crews, as well as all of the documentation that we will have to do for the reimbursement of those grant funds. But I am absolutely thrilled that we have that money that we get to spend in the Moapa area. I attended the Region 7 and 9 meeting with a couple of our board members. Mike and Jack were both there. We had very informative discussions. I enjoy the Region 7 and 9. I know many of you guys have attended the NRECA annual meeting. I like the 7 and 9 better. It's West Coast people. It's a smaller venue. They don't have as many of the speakers as they have at the national, but the venue is smaller. We don't have to walk for 3 miles to go from one meeting to the next. And so I thought it was a very, very good meeting. It was located in Bellevue, Washington. And my husband was quite nervous for me to travel to Seattle. And after our prior trip to Seattle and Portland, I was a little nervous too. I have to say, in Bellevue, we didn't have an ounce of trouble. We barely left the building, if we're being honest. When we did walk, we walked through a skywalk and went to the adjoining building. But I thought it was absolutely beautiful, and the meetings were incredibly well done. We heard I thought it was a very interesting talk from the head of NERC came and spoke with us and spoke on the infiltration of renewable energy into our grid and what that means and the implications of that and that we need to go, we need to start looking at maintaining our coal supplies, maintaining our natural gas. He never used the word nuclear, but some people brought that up. And then finally at the end, I thought it was funny, through his entire conversation, not one time did he mention hydropower, not once. And I thought, that's interesting. He's in the Pacific Northwest, and he doesn't. And boy, there were people who called him on it right away. And so he was reminded that the key importance. And then he was in full agreement with the importance of hydropower in our portfolio. So I took a class on leading the charge for regional impact through political engagement. There was a lot of discussion on the federal PAC and what they do for us by our state and how much each state contributes. They talked a little bit about the mobilizing the voices of cooperative power and leveraging grassroots outreach. I'm going to be honest and say I didn't get a ton from that. Now, should we have something like the question 3 that is about deregulation or something like that to come again? I do think it's really good for us to have those relationships and to be able to call on that group to mobilize in our state. But when we don't need them, I listened for about an hour to a class that I felt like I should have been for about 15 minutes. But outside of that class, I thought there was very, very good topics. I attended all of the meetings in regard to the Region 9 Resolutions Committee. As you guys know, I represent Region 9 on the resolutions. And this year we had Utah is the other representative, and they were up for re-election. And so Mike was prepared to make that nomination. We ended up not needing to say it because one person said, I just want to keep all three the same, and somebody else seconded it, and we were in, out, and done. And
seconded.
Yeah, there you go. It was the fastest. I thought, now you guys know what makes Jack Nelson happy. We were in, out, done. It was the quickest meeting we've ever been to. So, and then Mike represented us in the voting of those resolutions. We heard talks on investing in the future through the perspective of the youth tour and the leadership council. That's always empowering when they get those kids that have been to D.C. that come up and talk about what they've done and how they've taken that learning back to their communities. We did risk analysis for cybersecurity. And then we had a governance consideration for data centers and large manufacturing. Robert Eckenrode I've talked with you guys about him before. He's from Umatilla, Oregon. And they started out with one data center, and I've heard they have 34, and another time I heard they had 42 data centers in their service territory. Regardless, they sell over 1 billion kWh of energy a year, and they have 16,000 customers, and they started out with 40 employees when they got their first data center. So they've been a very good test for us to learn and watch and grow from. So we're continuing a good relationship with them, and then we have maintained contact with their engineering firm that they use for consulting too. The last thing that I want to talk about is on October 1st, we experienced a sub-cycle transient voltage, which manifested in many of our customers having strobing lights. That was caused by a battery energy storage system of a neighboring generator. I was made aware of that situation while I was driving to the office. I had actually pulled through the gate to get fuel in my company pickup. So I didn't witness the issue until I entered our Overton office. As soon as I got there, I placed a disconnect request with the generator, and they did comply with that immediately. And upon the disconnect, our system returned to normal operations. On October 2nd, we experienced the same voltage disturbance. Our staff notified the generator immediately, and it was resolved. That one lasted for 2 minutes. I was in contact with our friends at Lincoln County Power District that morning, and they ordered a cease and desist to on the battery deployment. My staff has worked in conjunction with the generator, Lincoln County Power District, multiple engineering firms, including our own engineering firm, to provide data for their analysis, and the cease and desist has not been lifted at this time. Further detail discussion of this incident will be led by our attorney in our executive session tonight after this meeting. And that concludes my report, unless you guys have any questions for me.
Was there any damage?
We'll talk about that in executive session.
Okay.
Sorry to cut you off.
That's all right.
All right, Mr. Chair.
As a side note, next year that Region 7 and 9 conference is in Salt Lake City.
Yes.
So that's within driving distance of you.
If you guys want a carpool, Jack will drive.
Or we could fly out of St. George Airport.
There we go. That might work too.
Okay. L, review and possible action here for OPD5 strategic plan for 25 through 28.
Yes. Will you go down to the next? Thank you. So you guys know, you participated in our strategic planning session that we held at the Hoover Dam. CFC had sent me the documentation, and then I went through, reviewed, and made updates to both the goals that you set and then the objectives that we can use to meet those goals. And so I'm going to present this to you guys tonight. I am not going to read every single objective because I don't want us to get out of here at 10 o'clock at night. Randy's been at enough late meetings lately. But I am just going to go through and remind you guys of the strategic goal that we set. You guys can look at this. This is for, did we put this for action?
It's for approval.
Yes. Okay, so you can approve this tonight, or if you need time to review it, make changes, we can bring it back next month for approval. Are you fighting me, Stephen?
All I was is trying to go back to the approval.
Okay, so our first goal, foster a culture of safety commitment across the organization and throughout the community. And then I have four objectives that we can use to meet that goal. Strengthen internal safety culture, enhance training and protocol compliance, expand public safety outreach, and improve measurement and recognition. Our second goal is to build a resilient, skilled, and future-ready workforce to support organizational continuity and growth. On this one, we have evaluate and strengthen staffing levels, advance workforce development and succession planning, expand cross-training and flexibility, enhance leadership and soft skill development, and strengthen talent acquisition and retention strategies. Also, support regulatory and operational demands. Our third goal is optimize infrastructure, project execution and resource planning to ensure long-term reliability and operational readiness. The objectives to help meet that would be to prioritize and complete deferred projects, balance capital investment across growth, maintenance, and reliability, evaluate and expand facilities and infrastructure.
Point there. At the last one, evaluate and expand the truck barn. Now, is that a strategic plan? I mean, I don't remember us mentioning anything except we want to review, prior you had postponed some projects, and we'll review them when time comes, but that's not a strategic plan, is it?
Well, we need to have a facilities plan. We need to look at...
No, and that's what it should really say, shouldn't it? A facilities plan?
Well, it said revisit previously postponed projects such as the truck barn and training facility projects. This is just objectives to meet the goals, but this is not you approving a budget for anything for a project.
I know that. I'm just saying that it seems to me... facilities is we need this building, for instance, or another building, or several warehouse and all that sort of stuff. Specifically.
Yeah.
Okay.
You want me to cross off truck barn? Because I will.
Yeah, just put facilities. I mean,
okay.
Okay.
Okay, I'm sorry.
You got that?
Mm-hmm.
Because we need that for the motion.
Yes.
Okay. Goal number 4, strengthen financial stability through proactive planning and equitable cost recovery. The objectives for that are evaluate the benefits of a formulary rate philosophy, maintain and evolve the 10-year financial forecast, prepare for future power cost inflations and rate structure flexibility, ensure fair and equitable cost recovery, establish financial policy guidelines, and monitor expenses prudently. Our goal number 5 is strengthen community trust and customer relationships through transparent communication, outreach, and service excellence. And those objectives would be expand community presence and educational outreach, enhance communication with key accounts and the general public, leverage media, technology, and staffing for engagement, and position customer engagement as a core organizational value. And then finally, our 6th goal is explore and evaluate future power supply opportunities to enhance reliability, flexibility, and long-term sustainability. And that is, the objectives would be evaluate self-generation opportunities and partnerships, assess regulatory, financial, and organizational requirements, develop a power supply philosophy and business engagement strategy, and engage with existing providers and industry peers. So that concludes the presentation for the strategic plan. If you guys want to approve it tonight with the change, we can do that. Or if you need more time to dissect what you would like the objectives to say, we can wait and put this on for next month.
What's your pleasure here, gentlemen? Can we make a motion? How move we approve it as presented with a slight modification?
Okay.
Okay, we have a motion. Second?
I'll second it.
Okay, we got a second. Everyone in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposition?
I want to say, I've already mentioned this, but this is like something that I'm really proud of. This is the first time in the history of OPD5 that every board member came and was engaged in strategic planning and stayed for the entire time and then worked through the process. So I'm excited for this. We've talked with our staff about what the strategic goals are, but we will start at safety meetings going over these and getting the buy-in from our employees on these are the strategies that we will now employ, and the work that we do will work towards these strategies. So thank you all.
Maybe having a spectacular location has something to do with that.
There we go.
But that's where we're holding all of them from now on.
Yes, sir. Very good. Discussion on the revenue requirements review. This is discussion only. Item J.
So as you guys know, when we made the decision for our rate increase and margin decrease in January, our rate increase was based solely on our power, the sales portion of our billing. As we've had a more mild weather year, we've seen that we have not received the revenue that we had anticipated. Plus, it's very hard to dial that in perfectly when you've reduced your margins so drastically. So Jonathan and I reached out to CFC and ask them to do a revenue requirements review of that. And Jonathan worked through that process. And so tonight he's going to go over with you what the results of that revenue requirement study were and any rate implications that came as a result of that.
Yeah, so as Melissa said, we started after the first quarter of 2025 to engage CFC to work on this, and then we worked for the next 2 quarters providing information for them and having discussions and meetings with them. And then they essentially came up with a rate adjustment that would essentially right the ship of 2025. We started in 2025 with a budget of around $5.5 million in revenue. And as now we're in September, we are anticipated, well, we're projecting that we're not going to meet that, and we kind of knew that for a little bit. And so their rate adjustment was, what would this rate need to do, or how would this rate need to be adjusted to obtain that for 2025? And so they provided that. And then we said, well, let's do some further analysis and say, well, in 2026, we have known increased costs. We have the interest expense on our future borrowings. We have the WECC compliance requirements and the cost for that. Those were the two major increased costs that we had. And then with the other adjustments with the solar being applied for the whole year instead of the half year, and then some other smaller minor things. And so this is what we came up with. This is what they came up with, and this is what we're recommending. So this is just back to you. The blue column there is what happened in 2024, and these are operating margins. 2024 is adjusted. Why they all say 2024 is because we use 24 as a model year to come up with these adjustments. So the center one is current year 2025 with the last quarter being adjusted for 2024 information. And then the 2024 target margin is essentially 2026. And we said we wanted to hit the $5 million operating margin. That was our goal, excuse me.
Okay, I have a problem with that.
What's the problem? Go ahead.
The problem is we are hitting additional expenses, as you point out, mm-hmm. plus fire mitigation and all sorts of, plus I noticed quite a increase in capital. And so they gave us an estimate before, and there were 40% wrong or so, 50% wrong. It just seems to me that going to the 5, maybe we ought to go to 6 million income so that we make up for what we lost, which we were significantly under, and we have these new projects coming online that the 4% will cover those new projects, but we don't make up anything for what we are behind. And I know we want to have some staff increases, or I think we want to have some staff increases, and we have significant expenditures there. It just seems to me that this is, if we're going to adjust the rate, and we have not made what they projected, I don't think they're projecting quite enough rate increase.
Yeah, I think that's a valid point that you bring up, Mike. And as I said, this $5 million margin for 20, it doesn't address revenue from the current year that we essentially
lost
essentially. But
increased base expenses.
Yeah, but it does include the increased expenses. So that was all, that information was all provided to them, those increased costs. And that's where this
our
operating margin
costs
is.
Are about 4%.
What's that?
Our increased costs are about 4%, right?
Yeah.
Well, those 4.7 is if they're increased ones.
Yeah. There's other changes in there, but when we put all the information in, there's a little bit reduction in our cost of purchase power because of solar, and then the increase with essentially 1.6 million, those, we gave them all that information. I went over it, and to me, that they included all that in the 5 million.
I understand they did that. Yeah.
And so let me just interject and say, we set the margin at 5 million. Now you guys are our rate setting entity. So you have the ability to say what you want the rates to be. But what we ask CFC to do for us is give us a revenue requirement study that would say, what do we need to bring in to set our $5 million? He's not telling you tonight what you're going to set the rates at. He's telling you, this is what would be required for you to have a $5 million margin. What you guys as a board direct us to set our rates at, is going to be different. We're going to have that discussion. Tonight is on what did the revenue requirement study tell us that we would need to do to have a $5 million margin? And if we did have the $5 million margin, would there be a rate increase required? And Jonathan will go for that. So I understand what you're saying, and if yes, you tell us later, we need a system.
Really,
but CFC gave, we gave them the $5 million margin to say, what do we need to do to get there?
Yeah.
That's my minimum. That's my minimum that I want our margins to be.
Okay, so you don't have any top margin then, huh?
Actually, I do. I think as a not-for-profit, we need to be considerate of the revenue that we bring in from our customers. Yep. And so I do have a top.
Okay.
All right, keep going, Jonathan.
So this,
me and Michael talk all night.
So this is essentially what we would need to make some rate adjustments to obtain the $5 million. And again, like Melissa said, this is for discussion only. We're going to continue to have these discussions, and obviously you all are the...
But we need to adjust it at the next meeting, I guess, right? At our November meeting for January, we're going to do it there.
Oh, we don't have to, but... We'll talk about it. We're going to present it a couple more times for the public to be made aware of it. I mean, you get to set the agenda, yes, but we don't have to implement it until January 1.
Yeah.
And you can do a rate change any month of the year. There's no... Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, yeah. Generally speaking.
These were based on, if we implemented on January 1, this would give you a $5 million margin.
And is this study based on... 2025 mild temperatures, or is it based on 2024?
Yeah.
So it says 2024. I'm sorry, Jonathan. Go ahead. I'm going to let you do this presentation.
Yeah.
I might need to sit in the hall.
We did adjust it, but for the 2024, we essentially took, we have known determinants for 2025, January through September. And we did an average. We did an average of the last 3 years. Okay. So 23, 24, 25 for the, and actually it's lower than over the past, and I can't remember when it increased, but over the past, I think, decade, our kilowatt usage has gone up. But this is the first year that it's actually reduced, current year, 2025. And so we took that into effect, and that's what we based it off of, 3-year average, and with those adjustments. So, do you have anything you want to add, Melissa?
It's confusing because it says 2024.
I know.
But they really did use actuals for the first eight months of 2025 with known determinants from 2024. But they were very keen to the fact that 2025 had different sales than 2024. And so, like Jonathan said, for those four remaining months, they took an average, because we know that 2024 is going to be, we know that 2025's last 4 months are going to be lower than what they were in 2024, but we're anticipating that 26, 27, one of those years, we're going to have higher sales. So we tried to average that out.
And we could have lower sales too.
Yeah, it could be more mild, absolutely.
The difficulty is 2025 is an odd year. We had unusually high expenses the first few months because of the transition, and then solar kicks in July, which changed their trend. So even if you do an average, it's not fair, really. Mm-hmm. Most fair months to look at would be July, August, September, October, November, and forward.
Mm-hmm.
Looking before July kind of skews the numbers.
But we took into account the solar for the revenue.
Because okay. You know your sales. Mm-hmm. Sales are not changing. It's your cost of power.
Power expense. And that's what Jonathan was saying. They took into account solar and other increases. So we had about a $2 million savings if we have January through December of solar. But we have increases of about 1.6 for debt service coverage and staffing and the TOP services through APCO. So those were all averaged in there, taken into account.
So with the with a $5 million margin
target
margin, yeah, operating margin, essentially, the rates will need to be adjusted, and we'll go through these on the slides, essentially, as what we have proposed is a $4 a month base charge increase, and then a 0.37 cent energy charge increase, and that's per customer class across every customer, and across the board for both of those. And I'll give you a slide with those details on it. But before we get to there, the average, just to keep things into perspective, average residential KWH for the country. This information is from the U.S. Energy of Information Administration. Every utility is required to provide this information to them. We have a reporting requirement. I think there's three different reports that total that we report to the EIA. That's where they gather this. And up there at the top, national average, 17.4 cents. Nevada is actually the lowest state in the country, 11.42, and then OPD is at 10.4, so we're slightly below the state average. And just residential rates is what we're talking about here.
And then, did you take the commercial on that? I mean, where do you sell the commercial as far as?
Commercial, we didn't do a national average for commercial. We did a local, well, neighboring utility mm-hmm. commercial. And the commercial is, we're higher and lower in some classes. A lot of the other utilities have, and ours is even a little bit complicated or complex, I guess. But a lot of the other utilities have complex commercial rates. But if we did look at where we are commercially, we looked at, I have all that information.
Well, the reason I asked that, I had somebody ask me about these rates when the power had that little fluctuation, and you know, then we posted it on our social media, some increases of this. This was on there, I believe, and a few things. And of course, they sound obvious as well. The reason you're doing this is because you're overcharged on the commercial rate, because commercial and Mesquite or whatever the case may be is above the national average. Right? And so I'm just curious how that, you know, where we're at on.
Jonathan, where are we in comparison with our neighboring co-ops?
So if we look at Lincoln County, their base charge, so commercial, they have two separate general services. They have a large general service. According to the information that I obtained from their website, they essentially have around a $57 total base charge. They're at 11.56 cents per kWh. And the small commercial, and then that's where they start in the other small commercial, and then it goes up from there, 12.29. We are in small commercial, ours is 10, and then in the second tier of small commercial, we start at 8, 9, and then 10, and then their large general service, they have their commercial rate is, they had two separate ones, they had rural and urban, wasn't for sure how played out, but they were 4.9 cents in one and then 11.9 cents in the other. They had a demand fee, which was slightly lower than ours. We were at 9.0 for a demand fee. Theirs was 7.7 and then either 8.8, depending on the type of service that they had. Dixie Power, they're at a 20 for commercial, they're at a $39 base charge. For small commercial, $60. For large general service, they're at $10.50 for a demand charge. And their energy was 3.3 cents and 4.2 cents. But then their small, I mean, it's kind of all over the place.
Well, so in this discussion, we talked about base charge.
So let me just have Jonathan tell one more thing, and then I'll circle this up. Compare us to Valley Electric for just commercial, not base charge, just what is their energy?
Okay, Valley Electric, their energy is $0.145 for small and medium commercial, and then they're at $0.10 for energy charge, for large commercial, sorry.
And we're at $0.10 and $0.08?
So ours, we're actually at, we're at point at, yeah, for large commercial, they're at 10, and then we're tiered for the small, starting at 0.08, 0.09, 0.10, and they're at a flat 14.
So Lincoln County is served about just over 70% of their portfolio is still from hydro. So their energy cost is low, and they're rural. Their commercial, their what they call their urban rate, that is to serve the Coyote Springs area. So the people in Lincoln County that their businesses are located there, they have the cheaper rate. Valley Electric is more comparable to us and purchasing from the market, and we're less than them. One of the assertions by a friend who routinely comments on social media is that our demand charge is ridiculously high and our commercial subsidize our residential. Our commercial does not subsidize our residential. We look at our rates when we did a cost of service study. And in the demand fees with NV Energy, they have what they call a demand fee, and then they have a what?
KW
transformer fee, I think is.
Well, I don't know that it's called that on there. What's it called on that rate schedule?
KW is what it says.
KW fee. So if you look on their rate schedule, it says demand fee, and it looks like it is half of ours, but they have two that are charged on every single bill. So the short answer to that is we are still comparable to all of our neighboring utilities.
Comparatively.
We're still comparable in rates, and our demand charge is not overly inflated.
Yeah.
Okay.
And the proposed rate increase is very small, really, comparatively. Real small.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you're only charging 10 cents to start with, you're only raising 0.4s.
Mm-hmm.
Hills.
Yeah.
My goodness. That's small.
Yeah, when you said 0.37, it's really 0.0037.
Yeah, it's 0.37. Yeah.
Right.
Cents.
Sorry.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, it's
0.0.
It's 0.003, right? It's less than half a cent.
It's less than half a cent,
yeah.
So it's.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so yeah, let's talk about base charge, Jonathan. Where do we rank?
Okay, base charge, right now we're currently fairly in the middle with our neighboring utilities at 3240 for, and this is strictly residential. And then if we increased our rate charge to the $4, we'd be at 3640, so we'd be the second highest on this graph right here. Valley Electric would be slightly above us.
Now, are we making any, besides the $4, any larger adjustment to our base charge for commercial customers?
It'll be
$4 across the board.
$4 to every.
Their suggestion was $4 across the board.
We had a discussion before the small user, which was the irrigation supply in some condominium projects, where they have a service, but they're only buying a small amount to run their irrigation system and light at night on the board. And so we gave them a pretty good break on that. They complained quite a bit about our service charge at 32, so we lowered it to 27.
23.
23, was it? Okay. And so we're probably going to get a little bit of kickback from them, because for them it's a big increase.
Yes, sir.
20%.
It's a big increase for everybody. $4 doesn't seem like that big of a deal when we say $4, but even though we're adding to the energy, well, Jonathan's going to tell you what it's going to do to everybody's rate, but this is part of a rate increase. It's a big deal to everybody.
But when they did our rate study, they showed it should have been $48, $47 or $48.
So are you arguing with me for it or against it?
Okay.
Okay.
In fact, I had a poster trial for a higher base charge.
Okay.
Which is the next nearest dollar.
Okay.
To the nearest.
Okay.
My question, though, is certainly it costs us more for the canning company to have for a 2,000, 4,000 amp service than a 200 amp service with a now a $36 base charge.
Okay, so there's a caveat to that, though. A residential customer pays a base charge for us for our operating charges to be, our operating costs to be recovered for them, and then they pay an energy charge. The canning company pays a base charge for our operating fees, they pay a demand charge for what they require from our system, and they pay an energy charge. And so some of the fees are getting charged through that demand charge for what they require from our system. But in all reality, we spend more time and attention on our residential customers than we do on our large commercial customers. Because just by gross number, because they're the people who come in and pay their bill online or come in and pay their bill in the office. They're the people who are calling. They're the people that we're disconnecting and reconnecting. And so some of that came from our cost of service, Rich, that said, are we subsidizing one class from another? What do they cost us? And those were already taken into account when we did our original rate increase.
My other concern, though, is they put up a lot of solar panels. What has that done to their power usage? Has it significantly decreased that? So
yes.
Not getting the revenue there.
Yes.
Yeah.
But they're included in an industrial rate, or they're included in our large commercial. Now, one of the things that I do think that we need to look at with our next cost of service, and that's, I think, going to have to happen sooner than we had originally planned, is that we need to consider having an industrial rate. When we did our cost of service back in 2023, we didn't have enough historical data to look at them. And so we said, okay, right now we'll set that at 5 megawatts. Anything above that would require a new industrial rate. Crown was the only one that was close to that. And we didn't have any history for them. So CFC said, get 3 years of billing data and then relook at setting a new rate. And I do think that you're right. There's going to have to be an industrial rate that needs to be charged.
Yeah,
and Crown will move.
Charging them at 0.0846. Mm-hmm. And our cost of power was at 0.0765. So we're at 0.8 cents per kilowatt hour sold.
Mm-hmm. Very little.
Much less than our residential rate that we get back on it.
Yes.
Yeah. Big difference. Yeah, and when I looked at the difference, since they did put solar on and looked at the difference of what, I mean, I tried to project of how much, yeah, we are going to lose revenue and there's a value to that, but we're also not, it's also reducing our cost. I mean, because we don't have to
buy it.
Buy it. So it's not necessarily a total, you know, loss. There's a...
Okay, well, I just wanted to throw that out there. Because we have had that discussion on, you know, basically their base charge is $76.45, up $4. They'll be at $80 for their base charge.
Yes.
Okay, so here's on the right, we provided two options for the rate adjustment to obtain that target amount. So, like we said, $4 across the board for every customer, every class to their base charge, and then the 0.0037 cents per kilowatt hour generates approximately $900,000 in the base charge, and then $1.6 million in the energy charge, so approximately $2.5 million total in the increased revenue. And then our option two here was we asked to look at possibly looking at the demand fee. So when we did that, the base rate would remain the same, the proposed change of $4. The energy increase would only be the 0.0028 per kilowatt hour, and then the demand charge increase would be the 87 cents per kW, and that would be to all current demand paying customers. We wouldn't implement a demand charge to non-demand charge customers currently. So then with the demand and the base charge would be $1.3 million in revenue, and then just under 1.2 for the energy charge, resulting at the same total, approximately $2.5 million. So those are the, those were the two options that we looked at for the rate increase. And then here, option one and option two, this is, we just did what a residential customer, average residential customer would be, and on the far right, per month, it would be an increase of $8.64 with option one, and then option two would be $7.51 because the energy would be slightly less and the demand would affect them.
So I looked at, I had Jonathan's staff pull one of our largest commercial and industrial loads to see how does that affect their bill. And that increase would be, again, $4 times the 12 months for their base charge, but their energy increase, their energy bill would increase approximately $10,000 a month. So that is a sizable, significant increase. And that is on option number one. That's not increasing the demand charge. That's increasing the energy and the base charge. And so to put that in perspective, because it's easy to look at this and say, well, we're not hardly affecting people, but we are. And it doesn't seem like $8 is that much of money for a customer per month, but we just raised people's rates, and I'm very sensitive to the fact that we just raised their rates and we're raising them again, or we're considering raising them again.
And okay. Here's the breakdown of how each, how the proposed option one and option two rate adjustments would affect each customer for each tier across the board. Just what their rates would be. And then that's all I have. And this is for discussion only.
On your NV Energy, what was the demand and the KW charge? What were just the it was $5 and some cents?
$5.48, and then there's a facilities fee of $4.60 per KW.
For what?
Facilities.
$4.60. So it's $10.08.
And Randy, if you look at large general service, demand charge is at $9.01. So when you have those discussions, that helps.
So remind me, at the beginning of this, you mentioned two new costs that we're having. One being having to get compliant with.
Yeah.
How much is that?
So we know for sure that it's around $500,000.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And what was the other one you mentioned?
The other one, so we're going to borrow more money, and so that's the debt service on the new borrowings. So $9 million this year, $9 million next year.
But what was the cost?
Oh, I'm sorry. It's right under $1
million. How much it's going to cost us?
Mm-hmm. It's going to cost an interest expense.
$1 million a year?
Mm-hmm. $1 million a year for both of them. So next year,
$500 each.
Total. Yes.
Yeah. And then an additional for the capital repaying on the debt is $1.2 million, but that doesn't affect our margins. That's on top of our margins. That's what we use our margins. One of the things we use our margins to do is pay down that debt. Doesn't affect our income,
but
just the interest expense does.
Yeah, paying down the principal has to come out of our margin, or doesn't you actually figure that into our cost of operations essentially?
Well, we can't reduce our margin by repaying debt. We just take the margins that we achieve, and then we pay down our debt with those margins.
So, but the interest expense was about $1 million and about $500,000 in WEC compliance. So that's $1.5 million that we had put in addition to expenses.
There's a healthcare cost that we added also. It was another.
We were planning on $5.5 million in 2025, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to come in about
$1.2 million
short. What's the guess right now?
Was three something.
We're
three
currently at 3.7, uh-huh. And it might at the most would be a million more than that.
So we'll be about 1.2, 1.3 short coming the end of the year.
Yeah.
He's a little more optimistic than me.
It's probably going to be around four.
Well, you know, I think we need to be pessimistic because we have to protect the agency. I mean, you can't be optimistic and put it at risk.
Right.
We should be careful, cautious optimism, I guess you might say. So don't use the lowest possible number.
We'll probably be around four.
What was your 2026
projection?
Oh, yeah, we are.
Because it was considerably higher.
We were the worst engagement last year. What was it? It was around 8.5.
So yeah.
We've already paid.
And we thought that we were going to, of course, have better revenue, but then we were going to have, we were going to reap the additional 6 months of solar. So, but that's been taken into account. And now when you calc that out for your pro forma just so far, what do you have? 26.
26. Well, I adjusted it to do that. Well, it's at 5.5.
5.5.
Those numbers just aren't adding up to me. I mean, if 2026 was projected at 8.5, we're going to have 1.5 more in costs, then we should be at 7, which is way above our 5 minimum. So why is this 5 requiring this?
I think one of the things that is difficult about this is that what we anticipated for revenue was 12.16 cents, and we based 2026 on receiving that. Jonathan, what did you report tonight that our revenue is at 11 point? Let me see.
It's not working out.
11.57.
Yes. And so we're just not bringing in the revenue that we thought we were going to. And so when we reduced our margins by as much as we did thinking that we would bring in that, we're now seeing that we reduced our margins by too much or we should have charged more in a rate increase, either one. So this is bringing us back to that.
Yeah.
It's the 8.5 also when we came up with that, it was before we knew any of the additional 1.6 that we're talking about now.
We're just not seeing the revenue recovery that we had originally anticipated.
Melissa, the thing is that you were mentioning about sensitive about the rate increase. We're all paying the rate, so we're all sensitive and understand the community's going to be. But an $8, I mean, if people got a $10 rate increase compared to going to the grocery store today, that's nothing. I mean, essentially very, very small. And it would provide us a lot more financial security. And we're going to have to adjust the rates when we get a new contract, too, because our contract's going to be up. In 2 more years, we're going to have to do another rate adjustment for that, and hopefully it'll come in lower. I'm not sure what the rate is these days. But
I'm pessimistic about that, too, Mike.
Good. Pessimistic is
bad. I can provide, if you want, those models that we used.
I do.
We can show the
because
ones that we had before at the end of 2024, and then we can show where we're.
As we move through the budget, Chad, we're going to give you better pro forma information and budgeting for the next 3 years that will help you make a more educated decision. So tonight, we're just giving you what did the revenue requirement say if we said we need to get to $5 million. They gave us that number. And then we said, but in all reality, we know without fail that our expenses are going to increase by $1.5 million. So what do we need to get to $5 million with that happening? That's what we're presenting you tonight. Now, how we budget for that going forward and what we present for a rate increase will probably be a little bit different. But tonight, we just wanted to show you what does the revenue requirement study say that we need. And in my mind, I felt that the increases that we have are operational costs, and they should come from the majority of it should come from fixed cost instead of the variable cost of energy like we did on our last rate increase. That's really the information that we wanted to provide for you tonight. But we know that there's far more budgeting information that you guys need to receive before you make a decision on setting the rate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because there may be some staffing increases too. I think we're going to see that. because that's in our strategic plan, isn't it? That we just have.
Yeah.
Is that enough for review? Do we need to move on?
I'm good.
Okay. So the next one is for discussion only as well. Discussion on the capital project. 26.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm waiting for Jonathan to take off. Sorry. Okay. I'm just going to turn it over to Jonathan, and this time I'm going to be quiet.
The engines are warm.
Y'all are hearing from me a lot tonight. Can we start, Melissa?
Yes, sir. I'm sorry.
Okay. So, a little bit of background. We, each year, we identify priority projects for the coming year. Typically large projects that provide additional capacity, improve reliability, and such. And what we've presented here are our capital projects for 2026. And this, again, this is for discussion only. And we will most likely vote on this next board meeting in November. So we've spent some time back and forth meeting as a management group and meeting with all of our staff to come up with these proposed capital projects and their amounts. And we based this off of our target of $5 million operating margin and within working with that. So our capital projects there, broken down by department. Administration, $556,000. Engineering, just over $3 million. Line operations, $512,000. Substations, $110,000. So our total capital projects is just over $4 million. If we do obtain the $5 million operating margin, that leaves us with just under $1 million, the $776,000 to use for future capital projects going forward. And in the 10-year reliability project, we'll address that as we get there in the detail. So we'll start with the administration. So administration has responsibility for the facilities and overseeing that, and so that's why this is on there. And Scott and Kyle are prepared to answer any questions on this. So any questions that we have on this, address to them. So are there any questions on that?
This is one of the projects that we've had in books, and it's a fine project, but when we're playing pretty close on the money here, $700,000, postpone it a year or more, it's not a big deal here, because we're spending like it's no tomorrow. I mean, most of us would budget much closer than this, and to put a project like this that is not reliability, I agree, we probably need it, and when we have money, I think it's something we ought to build and put the money. But it's right now, it's close on money, and I don't see why. I thought we postponed it.
No. Is this the truck? Can I answer? I'm sorry.
Go right ahead. You got it.
You can answer. But
okay. That's great. Well, and I'm perfectly okay with us agreeing to disagree on some items. So we had about $2.5 million for a truck barn that included truck bays, the mechanics bay, and a training and lunchroom for our line crew. That was originally slated to be about $2.5 million. As we looked at what would it truly cost for that to be done, by the time you did paving and we built out all of the interior of that building, it honestly is probably a $3.5 million project. And we said, we don't have the money to do it. But currently, our Overton crew works out of a crew room that, Stephen, if you will pull up a picture that I had Kyle take.
I would love to.
Oh.
I
had Kyle take a picture of our crew eating lunch this week so that I could show you what the crew room is that they work out of. Currently in Mesquite, when the crew starts their day, they have a TV that is mounted on the wall that they pull up a map, or they can roll out onto a large table the map and the plan for their work plan for the day. In Overton, they don't even have a table in their room. And you can see that they almost sit knee to knee to eat. Now, they don't spend a lot of time in here, but they also can only fit two computers for them to do all of their IT training and all of their e-time. So they take turns, three men per computer that they share each day to update their time. The reason I'm showing you this is because I want you to understand that the room that they're working out of was built, Richard, remind me when we built our warehouse?
92.
Since 1992, that room has not been updated. And so I'm not suggesting that we build a truck barn. I'm suggesting that we do some modifications to the current building at not to exceed of $500,000 that expands this room and the tool room and gets rid of the mechanics room to just give these men a viable working space that they can all fit in and that they can get into the air conditioning and eat their lunch on the excessively hot days. I am in agreement with you that we have to be mindful of money, and we're only presenting this tonight. You guys have the opportunity to say yay or no, yay or nay to every project. But as the CEO, I feel like my Overton crew has went without for many years, and it's my responsibility to ask. Now, if you say no, that's okay, but I'm going to ask for them that their room be updated.
Well, they especially need computers, good heavens.
And space for it.
And space for it. This room is extremely, extremely tight and antiquated.
Probably half the size of this room.
You know, it seems like we have a lot of room in the new office building we built there. And for the temporary, it certainly could be a little inconvenience, perhaps, to use a different part, different building. I mean, we're in tight financial shape right now. And this seems like, I agree with you, it's a good idea. In fact, I think building the expanded one is good. But I think we have to have the money for it. And we're talking pretty close money here. And so anything that's sort of on the edge, I would not support it.
Will you bring the budget back up?
Okay. Yes.
What is the mechanics bay? What is it?
It's just the mechanics office.
That one?
He has an office where he keeps parts.
Oh, really?
That's right next to this room.
And when we say office, it's a thick closet.
Yeah.
Well, I had a cube when I started with it.
Is that what you wanted?
Yes, thank you.
Math practice.
Okay.
It was hard to get a good perspective of the room with all the men in there, for sure.
Okay, let's move on to the next item.
Okay, engineering. Total of $3 million, just over $3 million, and Randall's prepared to answer any questions on this. So, just as a caveat, there were some minor changes that we made from what we presented to you all. So, there are a little differences and changes that we made to this. So
before we get started, I just want to find out, do you guys all understand the difference between an SI and a maintenance project and its impact to the financials? Mm-hmm. Okay, so an SI is actually a maintenance job, but we call it an SI because we're making it better. So as we make it better through a system improvement, we get to
It's capitalizing it.
Capitalizing it on the balance sheet. So if we keep it as a maintenance project, it goes to expense and can reduce our equity. And so these are still pole replacements, but instead of just replacing a pole with the same pole, we're taking it underground, which calls it a system improvement, which allows us to make it onto the balance sheet as an increase to our assets.
So all this would decrease our staff costs under regular staff.
Well, that has to go to Kyle, because he's the maintenance guy on the line. But these are maintenance.
Probably wouldn't be a good choice.
But SIs are just maintenance. It's just we're improving it so that we can capitalize it better on our balance sheet.
And I think that's fine. But if we're buying new stuff to put in this kind of thing, right now probably isn't exactly the right time to do it until we get our finances a little bit better. I mean, and if you if it costs essentially very insignificant additional purchase, that's fine. But when you're talking some big money items here, this looks like some big money items here, those could be perhaps postponed. Now you have to make that judgment whether, you know, this is a like-to-do project or it's a have-to-do. It's a big difference, and money-wise, and thinking that this isn't last year when we were making $12 million, you know, a margin. This is a tight year, and we have to watch our expenses carefully right now. So I would really like you to really look at these and see if there's something we can postpone here. I mean,
if we're directed, Mike, we can postpone a lot. It's just that these are wood poles that we've tested and we know that are bad.
If they're bad, that's one thing. If they're, well, this is an old pole, we want to replace some of these, that's a different story.
Correct.
And I just want you to be real tough on the line.
Sure.
I'll make sure, because the money is tight here.
And aren't these projects being done with borrowed money? They're not coming out of our margin.
Yes. No, this is, so it we is fund so we fund our capital projects from our margin. Mm-hmm. So we say we're going to have a $5 million margin. We have about $5 million to invest into our system. That's our investment back into the system. Now, for the reliability plan that we're doing, the large projects, we're borrowing for that. So I just want to say that as we have done our budget evaluations as a management group, we have had that very talk, and what was asked for and what has been presented to you has been drastically cut. Now, that doesn't mean that we won't go back and look at more, but we've lopped a lot of projects off of the list, and there are some things on here that Randall has discussed with me that if a large paying job comes in and we have to pick between doing this or doing the paying job, of course we're going to pick the paying job. But if it doesn't come in, these are projects that we do that invests into our system.
I understand. I just, you know, I just realize we're in a tight spot and right now. And it won't be that if we make some adjustments in our rate, we'll have the money to do this. It may postpone it a year or two. Who knows? But just look at that, real cautious.
Okay. Well, so it wasn't a while back. Didn't we prioritize a lot of this stuff? And how? And so the
we
question
did on
we have
our reliability
is on this list, you know, what is the priority here? If Mike is correct on the budget that we have down here, whatever the case may be, can we look at this list and say, okay, this would be my number one pick down through 10?
Right. Yes.
And then say, okay, you know what? The worst case scenario, we have to do these three no matter what. The next three would be the category. The next three would be, if we have a great year,
Mike gives us
some of his board money back,
and
we can do this.
You know,
and I think that's what you're saying.
That's exactly what I'm saying.
Sure.
And that's exactly what our engineering department is working on. So we did a reprioritization of our reliability projects, and we presented that to you. And then our engineering department put together all of the projects that they would like to see us do in 2026. We reprioritized those and locked some of them off, and we're presenting. And then they're, once again, before we approve the budget, are going to say, these absolutely have to get done. If you want us to cut our budget, we have no choice but to do these.
So the question that I have then, on this list right here, can you, again, categorize one through whatever that may be for the at most, no matter what, this has to be done.
Yes.
And then tier
sure.
down.
Yeah.
Because I think that's what Mike
absolutely.
Is trying to get at.
That's yeah. exactly it.
Yeah, we can
not
present
saying that
next.
Can or can't do it, but if worst case scenario, this would be, we have to do this, or number 10 would be, if we can do it.
Yes.
And we've already done that this year as
well. Well, that's what we did a few months ago. We prioritized a lot of stuff. I would like to see numbers listed to this,
sure.
and maybe that's in the right order as it stands.
It's not.
So, yeah, we reprioritize the reliability plan, and then this list that we have from last year, like Randall just said, they cut quite a bit of their projects that was on
sure,
last year.
And I think we understand that, but back to Mike's point, is simply just do us a favor and recategorize these again from 1 to 10 or whatever that number
okay.
is. That way, as the board, we can say, you know what? Okay, we understand the top six is an absolute must. The bottom four, we probably need to do them, but don't know that we can do them. Or however you want to
sure.
say it.
Yeah.
Yep.
And I think that's kind of to your point.
Easy enough. Okay, next.
I think we read your all's mind here.
You read a good
finance.
I support this. I support this totally.
Let's make a cut.
Oh, okay. Hey. What do we do?
Okay, land operations is essentially has the responsibility for the fleet, and that's what all these are, and Cal's ready to answer any of those questions regarding the fleet. And these are, Kyle can explain, but just done by a case-by-case basis on each one of these vehicles.
Yep, correct.
Well, fleet, that's another one. I look at the trucks we have, they're beautiful, really nice, everything. I remember when we didn't have nice stuff. We were broke, essentially, 10 years ago. And I think we need to make sure that we understand that the vehicles last a lot longer now, and that when we're in tight financial shape, hey, we can do this another year. That's the kind of attitude we should have at this time. Another time, hey, let's get it. But some of the trucks, hey, yeah, this is pretty used. It's got a lot of miles. It still runs pretty darn good. Let's go with it. Anyway, that's all I'm asking you guys to really do here. Not cut them all out.
Have confidence that I definitely do that. And I try to also, I build a budget for years to come, and I don't want it to compile on three years from now, have a fleet of wore out vehicles like you
say. 3 years from now. But that doesn't mean you can't postpone it a year or.
For sure.
And move some of them a little. As a point about prior, this vehicle's got to go.
Yeah.
I mean, this is
a lot. There again, I think you go back to this list again. It's okay. These three trucks we've got to replace because I've got to get to work and this isn't working. But maybe the top, you know, the bottom three.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm not saying we don't buy all of them, but at least we have the tier project of yes. This is a must, this is a maybe.
Yep.
Yes.
No problem. That's it.
We'll give you guys reprioritized list of every department for approval for next month.
Substations. Kevin, take it away.
These are needed for WEC compliance. That's all this really is.
Well, that's a have to.
That's a, yeah, I don't think I can cut much out of that.
You can't. Just say, I can't cut much out. Kevin's already cut his budget, and these are his must-haves.
Or required by, is it June 30th or July 1 to be white?
July 22nd.
Yeah, Mike, that's an easy one.
There you go. We're going to put priority 1 and 1 on both of those.
It's okay. I mean, if you've done that.
Okay. So this is the fairly close to the list that we brought to you all in June and in August, where we reprioritized our 10-year reliability projects. And so the top six projects are the ones that you have seen before. They were essentially, the two main ones were the transformers for the Tortoise Transformer and for the Arrowhead/Mesquite substation, that those projects and transformers were.
Are you trying to win Kevin over or me here, Jonathan?
So those were moved up into this year, where they were, the lead time was farther out, and we started paying for those this year. And we said that we were going to do that, and then we said that we actually were going to seek approval, and these were going to be budget items for approval in November. So those are the first six. And then the next three are additional ones that you haven't seen before. And we can entertain questions on those if you want to ask what, or on all of them.
Good. I have a question on those three. One is a cap bank. We said, hey, we don't absolutely need that for a while until our load grows a lot more. Now it's back in a tight year. And also the Acquire Mesquite Warehouse. Again, yeah, we need to expand it, but do we need it right now? No, I don't think we do. I think you need one. There's no question about that. But all of a sudden, it was on the list before, but there was no expenditures. Now there's expenditures for this stuff. And how does a bucket truck get on this? I mean, seriously, that I look at that and go, bucket truck? That should be in his budget, not reliability, for goodness sakes. and it should be moved to the other category because that's all vehicles.
I'm going to disagree with you on that. The reason that we put the $500,000 bucket truck on a reliability plan is because it's $500,000. And so we don't just come to you on the year of and say we need to spend $500,000. We plan those out for every 3 to 5 years or when we know those trucks are going to be need to be purchased. So the large item trucks that take 3 years to be built, we've had on a reliability plan since our very first one. If you look here, you can see that there's no expenditure in 2026 for the bucket truck. We're simply asking for the approval because Kyle needs to send a PO so that they can build the truck. And in 3 years from now, the cash allocation will go for it. There's been large trucks on the reliability plan since the inception of the reliability plan.
I think we have this discussion that we now do not have a truck with these taller structures right. that will reach.
I thought we
and that, that's the reason for this.
We haven't run an order, don't we?
That's no. a bigger, no. Derek. We haven't ordered a new big bucket truck.
Okay, you have two shown in that picture, right? Do you want three? Is that it?
No.
This bucket truck, as Kyle was saying and what Rich said, is that with the new transmission line, we don't have a bucket truck to service that line in the event of.
But it takes 3 years for it to be ordered. So we're asking you for the budget approval so we can get it ordered. The cash allocation to it will not happen for 3 years. When Mendes used to do the capital budget, he would piecemeal out the money. So he would tell you, we're going to order a bucket truck. It's not going to be here for 3 years, but we're going to put $50,000 to it this year, $75,000 to it next year, and then we'll make up the... We're doing the budget different. We're saying the truck's going to cost $500,000 and you're going to approve for us to order it. Then when it comes time to pay for the truck, Kyle's going to come back to you in 3 years from now and say, we got the truck and it only cost $450,000. I'm $50,000 under budget. Or he could say it's going to cost $525,000 and we would have you allocate an additional $25,000 to the budget. The only difference is we're telling you now we're going to issue a PO if with your approval to order the truck and 3 years from now we're going to get it. And that's the only reason we put it on the reliability plan because there's such long lead times and it's so much money. We're not asking for a $50,000 truck that we do every year. We're asking for a $500,000 truck.
In the past budget, I saw it, and it was $300,000 or $400,000 when we bought one before, and it had, we need $50,000 down payment, or $100,000, and then, but the rest of the expenditures were further out. That's how we handled on the last budget, I thought.
That's how Mendes always did it. He piecemealed out that money, but then what?
The reliability, but then, like it's our 10-year reliability plan, that wasn't on there originally. Yet we knew it. Yet. Okay. Well, anyway, that's where you want to end.
Okay.
My question is on the warehouse. We're asking for $350,000. Is that property acquisition?
Yes.
So we're not asking for the warehouse because that would be $3
million. Correct.
So I think we're just planning for the future. We need to get the property in place.
Timing is everything with purchasing that.
And it was for a little bit of dirt work or putting some fence in if we got it?
We have dirt work. We have BLM requirements. We're trying to get BLM land, so it won't cost us anything other than annual rent payments. We'll have engineering to get it ready, and so that's what
the... This was just the starting. We did postpone that project, but we're saying that there's some fees at the beginning as we go through that BLM process that may come up, and we don't want to come to you after the fact. So we're telling you now that there was $350,000. And if you looked at last 10-year reliability plan, it did show that that money was going to be spent in 2026.
It shows $2.7 million, doesn't it?
You're on the wrong line. That's Arrowhead Substation.
$350,000. Okay.
And with government shutdowns, it might not ever happen in 2026. I would be so backed up with things and money from those guys, to be honest with you.
Oh, it's going to end any minute.
They promised it that they'd shorten the time on BLM.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Okay. Before we move on, Kevin, I want you to address Mr. Young's comments on the cat bank.
So the cat bank we've put off a long time, and our load's increased enough now that we've had studies done, and we're 30 MBARs shy of what we need to maintain voltage on this side of the system.
How much off?
30 MVA. 30 MBARs. sorry, 30 amperes. It's a measurement of volt axe reactants. Volt amp reactants.
Yeah, the solar input has not affected that?
The solar input actually...
Because our study was done before that input into our system, right?
The solar on this end of the system during those hours that they're generating, yes, it helps. Mm-hmm. But off those hours, we're still shy. So when they're not generating, we're lacking on those amperes.
And I saw that postponed until 2028 and 30 and 32 or something.
And we had those at $600,000 increments. Do you remember what year we did that study?
It was like 2 years ago.
Yeah.
But it was without the solar. No input at all on that.
And so like Kevin said, during the sunshine hours at full production, there is help of us having generation on this end of our system. But during the ramp up and the ramp down, there isn't. And so as Kevin has done analysis with our engineers looking at our system, they're telling us that now is the time that we need to implement that.
Did the engineering study yet with the new system or the new voltage inputs, right? Because we only had it 3 months.
Well, during off sunshine hours, yeah, we need it. Yeah. So
the only other thing that might change it is the Gila to Tortoise line.
Well, in the battery
company line, they make a difference.
And the battery line, the battery system, when they get that working.
The new Taurus line was in the study because we knew that was already planned.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. But the battery system is on the peak hours. They're going to use that as soon as the sun goes down for those few hours that are peak. The rest of the time, again.
Yeah, but still, our system shouldn't have to rely on that to be stable throughout that time.
Shouldn't have to, but we've been relying on it all this time. Hey,
is this $150,000?
We're talking $150,000 on that. Right? That seems a pretty nominal.
You're the one that put it on there.
Okay,
I think that was more than $150,000.
Yeah, way more.
In 26?
Yeah, because we need to purchase them. We need to order them.
But I thought they weren't going to actually come until 27.
We haven't reached back out yet.
Yeah, we need to reach back out and see just how far of a long lead time it is, but it should be more than
$150,000. Yeah.
The total is $1.5 million, so if we did it 3 stages, it would be at $500,000.
So we will look at this. If you would like for us to move the 110-foot bucket truck to the fleet budget instead of to the reliability, we can move that. And then Kevin will solidify and give you more information on the cap bank at Gila, the necessity of it, and the timing.
So at the far right column, that's what we're anticipating cash outlay would be for 2026,
8 million.
And what the additional budget allocation needed column, the 17 million, that's what we're essentially seeking approval for, is to move forward with these projects.
Now, I'm sorry, I want you to go back. When Jonathan tells you that it's $7.9 million in cash outlay, that's only for these specific projects. Sure. There are projects that have already been fully budgeted for that there's going to be cash outlay. We just wanted to give you an idea of the cash outlay. One, to help drive home the point that the bucket truck was not going to have any cash outlay. This is just simply for you to approve for us to order it so we can get it 3 years from now. And on that, when we talked about those reprioritizations, we showed you that, like on the Arrowhead transformers, we only budgeted, you guys only approved $1 million because it was just going to be for engineering and the initial order of the transformers. Now they're here, and so that's why now they're on order. That's why the additional budget allocation we're bringing to you guys.
So this, at the bottom, the 10-year reliability projects, that's for approval moving forward, not necessarily the cash outlay for 2026. On these, like Melissa said, but we do have the addition or the current in place cash outlay and projects, capital projects, and 10-year reliability projects that we're working on. So there's a summary back to where we started there.
So this is for discussion only. We'll bring you guys updated information next month and have it as an action item for your guys' review.
Okay. Sounds great. Public comments. Anybody left over there?
I don't think
we disconnected
so.
We didn't have anyone over there anyway.
Okay. Yeah. Trustee comments. Oh, yeah, I do. At the conference that we attended in Bellevue, Washington, I took the AI class, Artificial Intelligence. It was very fascinating, and they were talking about the data centers and the evaluation, and one of the things about the data center was their extremely heavy use of water. In fact, that became an absolute major, major consideration. Our lack of water here may put us in a situation where that's not going to happen here. But anyway, the other part was using some of the artificial intelligence, and they didn't say it, but I thought, what a deal for grants, and what a deal for RFPs. It can write the whole thing. So I contacted a couple of my college children, and they said, oh yeah, it writes the whole thing for you. What are you talking about? I'll send you a paper. And they sent me a paper. They asked a question, and three pages all filled out. And so all I have to do is go ahead and edit it, edit it a little bit. And the teachers say they checked, but there's no way they can do this. But the fact is, for Vernon, for writing proposals for grants and for RFPs, this is a terrific tool.
We're using it for a lot of our WEC stuff right now.
Yeah, well, it's absolutely beyond the show that, and it was an incredible possibility. The rest of the use of it is not in our ballpark now. It's way outside. Is there a lot of editing you have to do?
It gives you a pretty clean file. It's pretty amazing.
Darn good, because they scrape everything. Some of it might be false info.
Yeah, it's very helpful.
And there are about three or four real good ones. So you can actually request of each of them, sort of compare what's the output, maybe mix and match.
Yeah.
Seemed like a terrific opportunity. And also, they're having a podcast on it at the end of this month. I have got the information yet. But the guy who taught it,
Pat Megan.
Is giving it and about using artificial intelligence and the possibilities. They insisted that you ought to have all sorts of policies on it and everything, how to use it, but I think that's way out of our ballpark right now. But it seemed to me that'd be a great use for it. And I'll send it to you when I get the date for the podcast, and maybe she can email it to everybody. So you might want to watch it. It's kind of cool to watch that.
Has he given us credit for it?
No, you don't get any credit for you. And so, but they don't charge you anything for it.
Oh, okay.
Except for your computer time. That's it. Okay, we're looking at N, approval for next board meeting, Wednesday 19th in Overton.
I make that motion.
Second. Okay, we have a motion in a second. Everybody in favor?
Aye.
Executive session.
Can we have a 2-minute break, Mr. Chair?
Absolutely. 2 minutes.